Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. This is the show where we talk about some news in the restaurant world, as well as a couple of meals that we've had at restaurants around town. To do that, I'm joined by my co-host this week. She's a former commercial real estate developer and marketing expert. Monica Dano, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm good, Eric. Man, it's been a while, huh?
It has been a while. You've been a busy lady.
I have been. 2024 kind of has been a little up and down, so glad we made the time to finally catch up, get some food.
Well, and of course, I said, you know, I got this promotion and nothing about the podcast is going to change. And then I immediately blew off a Tuesday show and didn't have news of the week and didn't have restaurants of the week. So I'm glad you're here because we've got a lot to talk about.
We sure do. You're already slacking in that role.
All right. Let us dive right into the news of the week. Topic number one, Alex Padilla announced that he is leaving his role as the executive chef of the original Ninfas. Alex has been there since 2006, so it's almost 18 years that he's been in that role. In a press release announcing his departure, some of the reasons were the limited opportunities for culinary innovation at a restaurant that is as well established with Ninfas, as well as his desire to do some travel. And the good news is that the restaurant last year announced that it had made a number of key hires on the culinary side, including Director of Culinary Operations, David Luna, who, you know, people may know from his time at Line and Lariat. He spent a long time working for Good Company and all that. So I don't want to, this is not doom and gloom, but sure. I do want to talk about Alex for a few minutes. This was a very popular story on Culture Map. I think a lot of people have followed Alex's career and our coverage and elsewhere. And so they're intrigued by this. But let me just ask you, I mean, Monica, what did you think about Alex's time at Ninfas?
Well, first of all, I can't believe that 2006 was 18 years ago. That kind of blew my mind. I can't believe it's been that long that he's been there either. You know, with that kind of a long-standing institution, you kind of expect some like long stints of not a lot happening, right? They've kind of got their formula down. They, you know what to expect. They're very consistent, you know, aside from, you know, opening Post Oak, what was that, almost five years ago. You know, when I think about innovation, which I think is a word you used in an organization like Ninfas, I think it's hard to do. We've had lots of conversations around these kind of, you know, tried and true kind of steady go-tos, kind of like a steak and grates that we've talked about before. And I think it's maybe harder for those restaurants to innovate and be new. I remember, this was probably 10 years ago. I guess they brought in Bobby Hugel to kind of mix up some different cocktails. They had that beef fajita burger that was really good. So, you know, I think over the years, they've tried to kind of insert other kind of culinary and cocktail minds to stay relevant. But other than that, you know, I kind of understand why he maybe is feeling in a rut there, because it is such an institution. It's kind of a double-edged sword, isn't it?
It is a little bit of a double-edged sword. And I suspect you're like me. I mean, I remember making my first, you know, growing up with Ninfas, the locations that were kind of scattered around the city before the company kind of had some changes and a lot of those locations closed and all that. But I remember going to the original Ninfas on Navigation, mm-hmm. With my dad back in the 90s and seeing Mama Ninfa sitting in the dining room. And even by then, she was such a well-established figure in the life of the city of Houston.
Sure,
that it was exciting to see her there. You know, even though I never talked to her or really interacted with her, but just that she was physically present and sort of greeting people.
Yeah,
the face of the whole thing was very exciting. And so, you know, when Alex came in, you know, it's been a time of tremendous growth for Ninfas, and some of that's credit to Neil Morgan, who owns Legacy Restaurants and operates Ninfas. But, you know, I think Alex gets a lot of credit for that. I mean, you know, they went through a whole kitchen renovation several years ago. And one of the things they did was they brought in a wood-burning grill. And so before that, you know, I don't know exactly. I guess they were searing the fetus on a plancha or a gas grill or whatever. But Now you can get your wood grilled fajitas. I mean, it seems like such a no-brainer, but they had never done that before, and it made the fajitas taste better. And I know that you could go in and you could get, a seafood special, or I mean, I went in there once and he was doing lamb barbacoa tacos that were really great. And so, yeah, I think, within the boundaries of Tex-Mex, there was kind of a limited room for innovation. And he had a fantastic career in California, worked at some great restaurants on the West Coast before kind of coming home to Houston and taking charge at Ninfa's. But,
Yeah.
I think it, Ninfa's was always a legendary Houston restaurant, but I think what Alex really brought was a kind of level of culinary expertise that made kind of the food as good as the rest of the experience. And
Yeah,
so,
I agree.
one of the things I mentioned in the article, and one of the things I'm sure that he's very proud of, is that they were James Beard semifinalists for Outstanding Restaurant, which is really one of the top prizes in the awards in 2019. So, that kind of, taking that kind of historic restaurant that people have so many great memories there, but really kind of leveling up the quality of the food and then replicating that experience in a lot of ways with the Uptown expansion. I think that's I think he gets a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, over the past, like you said, 18 years, watching that restaurant kind of evolve, same, like you said, I used to go, kind of a one room shack, and then, over the last 15 years, you'd go and you'd see another room added on, you'd see a patio renovated, you'd see the patio closed in, right? It wasn't kind of this big expansion they did all at once. I think that his tenure there for 18 years, it has to do with the correct amount of kind of growth to sustain that sort of restaurant. I mean, if they would have brought someone in, done a bunch of renovations, brought a new chef in, I just don't know if that would have sustained as well. Obviously they learned some lessons with when they tried to franchise and pulled all those back down. And I think they've done it the right way. And maybe it's just time for, them to part ways and someone else to be there for another 18. I don't see Ninfa's hopefully as kind of this carousel of executive chef coming in and out. I mean, that's just some restaurant's brand. That's what they do. I think it makes me feel good to know that someone's been there a long time. They know the techniques. I had a conversation with Jonathan Horowitz probably about 5 years ago, and they were, he was with Legacy for a short period of time, and they were moving to the or moving. They were opening the Post Oak location, and they had a lot of operational issues just with the cookware because those seasoned pots and pans and grills had been seasoned naturally for 20, 30 years. And you got this brand new restaurant they spent $3 million on that was already a restaurant. And it was like, wow, the food doesn't taste quite right, right? So I think it's more than the recipe, right? It's that baked in kind of experience you get from that location that I think, being one place for 18 years really does sustain that consistency. I think bringing new people in every couple of years is great for kind of a pop, a PR pop, but you really do want someone in that kitchen to uphold that legacy for a long time. So, I mean, I wish him well. I'm interested to see what he's going to do next, but really interested to see, how they're going to take it here and, if they step up and do the same thing and keep doing what we love.
Yeah, no, and I do think the restaurant is in good hands with David and some of the other people that they brought in last year to kind of keep an eye on things. I mean, certainly the line cooks, the sous chefs, all the people that work with Alex at both locations, I'm sure none of them are going anywhere, at least in the short term. And so I'm not worried about Ninfa's maintaining its quality and Alex's departure. I'm more kind of excited about the opportunity that's ahead of him and what he might do next. And
Sure.
I don't know if you remember, there was a period of time several years ago when the Ninfa's folks were talking about doing a seafood restaurant as a companion to Ninfa's, and
Yeah, I do remember that.
it never came together, and they had a space in mind, but they decided not to go through with it. And so I don't know anything. I haven't talked to Alex. I haven't talked to anyone at Legacy. I don't know what he's doing, but it wouldn't surprise me if that's just been kind of in the back of his head, and seeing all of these other seafood restaurants, going all the way back to Caracol, and then more recently Little's and Clark's and Navy Blue, and just kind of getting that itch to be like, you know, I could do something. I could put my spin on this. I could move on from the Neenfa's brand and the requirements and the restrictions of being affiliated with Neenfa's, and I could do something really great. And to the extent that if that is what Alex is working on, and again, I'm just guessing, but if he's planning a seafood restaurant, I would personally be very excited about that.
Yeah, no, that's a great move for him. It's, I guess time will tell.
Indeed. All right, let's move on to topic number two. Chicago hot dog favorite Portillo's has revealed its plans to open its first two Houston locations, one in Richmond and one at Willowbrook Mall. You know, I have to say, I don't pretend to know that much about Portillo's, but I do know it is a Chicago favorite. And when they opened in Dallas a couple of years ago, it was an absolute frenzy, kind of like when In-N-Out came to town. Hour-long drive-through lines, police officers managing the traffic, just the whole crazy thing. And I know because my sister and her husband, who live in Dallas, took their children and sat in the line for an hour and got hot dogs and pronounced the experience totally worth it, which I thought was hilarious. But Monica, let me just ask you, have you ever been to a Portillo's? Do you have a perspective on this?
I've been to several in Chicago. I love a good Chicago dog. And look, they're the most well-known chain there, right? Probably could get a better Chicago dog in Chicago somewhere else. But consistency again, yeah, it's a great hot dog. You know, I think with the locations that you mentioned, kind of inside the mall and in Richmond, is interesting to me. You know, that sort of says something to me when out of town concepts come in to kind of go into the suburbs. I think it would be exciting if they were coming into town in a cool little, maybe freestanding, funky, kind of like a turkey and the wolf experience, if you will, from New Orleans. I think kind of trying to start there and then kind of branching into more of a suburban landscape would be cool. I mean, I would like to see that. But look, we got a lot of good hot dogs in Houston, and I think most hot dog places do a Chicago style hot dog, if not all, right? So,
Right. I mean,
you
Good
know,
Dog, just to mention one, Good Dog does a very tasty Chicago style
absolutely.
dog with the seeded bun and the pickles and
The
the whole
sport
shebang.
peppers and the
Yeah.
mustard. So yeah, I will definitely try it. Am I going to be there standing in line for 2 hours to try it? No. I'll wait till that dies down. But you know, I love, from a real estate perspective, I love watching and following brands from outside of Houston, outside of Texas even, come into our city, and I'm so interested to see how they make this work, right? I mean, you really need good real estate experts that, you know, in the food industry that know where to go, know what to do, know promotion. Otherwise, it can go south pretty fast, and we've seen that happen. So no, I'm interested. I love a good hot dog, even more love a good Chicago dog. Have you had one? I didn't even ask you. Have you been to Chicago and been there?
I have not been to Chicago. I have not been to Portillo's. So this is all new to me. I will say, you know, you mentioned the real estate, and that is part of what I think is such an interesting piece of the story, which is that the Richmond location is 7,700 square feet with interior seating for 170 people plus a patio. And then they said, oh, we're opening our, they call it the Restaurant of the Future design in Willowbrook, slightly smaller, 6,000 square feet, which is still enormous, with
Oh,
130 seats
wow.
inside and 40 seats on the patio. And
That's
so,
huge.
given that that's the kind of footprint that they're looking for, it's no wonder to me that they're not opening inside the Loop, because good luck finding, you know, good luck selling hot dogs to inner loopers when you've got to cover, you know, 6 or 7,000 square feet. But, you know, my thought immediately was, James Coney Island has been the Houston hot dog staple for generations, and we've seen them close location after location. And when asked about this a couple of years ago, they said, well, people just aren't, you know, kind of post-pandemic, people aren't dining in for our at our style of restaurants in the same way that they used to. And so we're looking to sort of make some money for our investors, right? Sell off this land that we had owned for years, and then we'll regroup in smaller footprints, more to-go oriented. And Portillo's is saying, screw that. You know, we're gonna lean hard and dine in, and clearly it's been working for them in Dallas. I think they already have four or five locations. And so this contrast between the homegrown hot dog chain that's in a period of transition where they're moving away from dine-in, and this upstart or this out-of-towner that's got this big brand and this big reputation that's saying that's leaning into dine-in. I'm not quite ready to call it the Houston hot dog war, but the contrast struck me, and since this is kind of your area of expertise, I just thought I'd throw it at you and see what you think.
Yeah, it's interesting you brought up real estate of JCI because you think about those original locations, Post Oak, Westheimer, Montrose in Richmond. Those are super prime. I mean, 30 years ago, 40 even, when they probably closed on those properties, who would have known? Those were the areas that are going to be hot. And I almost wonder if, like you said, them owning the real estate and just sort of operating this little, mom and pop the hot dog stand that maybe didn't even need to be profitable was kind of part of the land strategy at some point. It's hard to ignore those locations, knowing that Portillo's is coming in, obviously leasing spaces. And with these really huge spaces, I didn't realize they were that big. That's going to be super interesting, especially in Richmond. And I don't remember even when I was there. I know they had fries and other sides, but will they expand or do they expand that menu outside of hot dogs? Because for 7,700 square feet, I mean, I can see this being kind of a flash in the pan. Everyone, for the first 6 months can't wait to get it. But sustaining that big of a restaurant for years is something that's really hard to do.
Well, and they, the other thing that they do, of course, is Chicago beef, right? And everybody who watched the first season of The Bear,
Sure.
had a craving for a Chicago beef sandwich. And then they do burgers and chicken sandwiches and salads. It's a pretty complete fast food menu, obviously with a focus on Chicago hot dogs. But again, like you just the McDonald's of our youth, right? With big dine-in
Yeah.
areas and play areas for kids and all that stuff, that's all gone now. And so that Portillo's is going the other way. I just thought that was so interesting.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But yeah, I'm excited to get one. I won't stand in line for 2 hours to get one, but after that, I
All right. And then topic number three, High Five Mini Bar coming later this month to the Stomping Grounds in Garden Oaks. It is occupying the shipping container that had been home to Little Dreamer Coffee. Monica, you worked for Revive Development, the company that built the Stomping Grounds. You live in Garden Oaks.
I do.
So let me ask you, what do you think about swapping coffee for cocktails at the Stomping Grounds?
I obviously have some intimate knowledge about that space, and I think this is a good move, and I'll tell you why. I love dearly Matt Toomey of Little Dreamer Coffee. We did struggle with the coffee kiosk for a while, and there's lots of reasons for that we don't have to go into, but I love the bar situation here. I think at one point when we tried to make Little Dreamer work, we added cocktails at night in order to kind of get the maximum use of that space. And the cocktails were way more popular than the coffee. And I have a couple of ideas for why that is. But I think, kind of fully leaning into what did work at Little Dreamer, which was the cocktail program, is a great idea. I get my nails done at Stomping Grounds, and I kind of face out the, if you're not familiar with the Stomping Grounds, it's a large 8,000 square foot green space, and they're kind of restaurants are turned inwards into the green space versus traditional real estate for restaurants, kind of parallel to the street because the buildings are existing, or one of them at least was. So I'm facing as they're repainting over that beautiful Little Dreamer a mural. They're repainting this really cool kind of retro High Five mural, and I kind of was asking questions, and because I don't work for them anymore, and I heard about it being, affiliated with Chris over at Beetlejuice, and so I'm excited about it. This space, like you said, Eric, I helped build it, helped lease it. I live in the neighborhood. I think there's been a lot of talk in neighborhood Facebook pages, which are, the official way people get news these days, about that space and how it was built. And I'll tell you this, it was built for families. It's in a neighborhood. It was built for families. Lots of chatter on those Facebook pages around what it needs and what it should be, and should there be balls there, and should there be frisbees, and should there be a lifeguard who keeps people's kids, at bay. And one of the reasons that there's a perimeter, there's an enclosed fence around the entire lawn, which was by design, so your kids aren't running into 34th. But there's been also a lot of kind of, parents that may get a little relaxed and kids are jumping on tables and kicking balls around. So, I think, this is a smart move for them to kind of lean into that older crowd and cater to, some adults, at least at night, to get that kind of second, third, fourth shift, as they call it, after the kids are gone, really give the neighborhood or, single people or people who have kids, people who do have kids and don't like kids, a place to go and kind of hang at night. It's a beautiful space. I think they struggled a little bit at nighttime activating because it's such a family-friendly location. I think this is a really good move, and I'm excited about it.
Yeah, no, I think all of that is very well said, and I think one of the things that you have that a couple of restaurants in La Mexicana and Himari that are maybe a little bit more, I mean they're family friendly to be sure, but sushi and Tex-Mex can also be a little more grown up. They're kind of set for a dinner crowd. And so the idea that you could go to either one of those restaurants and then stick around, if the weather's nice and grab a drink at High Five and sit in the green space and kind of enjoy the nice weather. I think that's very appealing. And, as you mentioned, it is affiliated. Well, it's, Chris Cusack, who is one of the founders of Downhouse and is now the mind behind Beetlejuice, the pizzeria and cocktail bar, is an investor in this project with a bartender named Will Abarb. And I had an occasion to meet Will. We happened to be at a bar on the same night, and he introduced himself. He's very excited. He's got a really clear vision for what he wants to do at High Five, and he's really excited about being part of the neighborhood. And he said, "Yeah, I signed a," he told me he signed a year lease to kind of see how it goes,
Yeah,
but that
smart.
he wants it to take off. He would like to be there for as long as the neighborhood will have him, essentially. And I think that, kind of mixing things up, right? Because as you said, it's a family-friendly space, and certainly like on the weekends, at lunchtime, it's kids everywhere. And
Yeah.
it's not,
Yeah.
if you're not a parent, I think it can be maybe not as appealing.
Overwhelming. Yeah. And
Yeah,
I've
over.
even had suggestions. I've seen suggestions on, the experts over on the Facebook pages, because they're real estate experts, and restaurant experts.
Yes, they're all restaurant
They're
consultants
all,
and
yeah, exactly.
real estate experts. Yes, very much so.
There's been suggestions of a curfew, 9 o'clock curfew. There's been suggestions of a security guard to, tell kids what to do. Everyone has an idea, but I think this probably organically will help that, right? If there is kind of a focus on the lawn for nightlife, they've done a lot with programming the lawn on the stage with, they do some family friendly music, but then, they've wanted to do like, singer songwriter series and, louder bands for at nighttime, which I think is great. I think our neighborhood wants that. It's just, getting everybody on the same night to say, okay, this is the adult night, this is the family night. So, I think they're figuring things out. This weekend, I drove by and I was actually with my son and I pointed to it and I go, look at this, Tom. Got me. It was packed. When the weather is nice, it is crawling with people, which I'm thrilled for those restaurants that are there to have that, because, we opened that space in the middle of COVID and it was a struggle. I will say, it was a blessing to have an outdoor space during COVID where people could kind of go and spread out. But I also think for restaurateurs, for rising taxes, for rising food costs, I'm excited that, the tenants there that have really kind of seen that development through are really starting to reap the benefits of the why it was built, what it was built for. And I think having cocktails in that location is great. I mean, I'd love to see coffee be there at some point. Maybe they'll bring it in the morning. I know there's a lot of stay-at-home parents and, caretakers from the hours of 9 to, 2 o'clock. You've got small kids that, aren't in school. I know they want coffee options. And lots of the restaurants there have coffee, right? I mean, La Mex is open at 7 a.m. every morning there with their, very popular breakfast items. We've got Lulu's, who's got coffee as well. So we'll see how that plays out. I think one of the challenges for that spot, because everything is so kind of close together, is making sure you've got the right mix of operators, that you're not stepping on toes. And you know, not we went to great lengths when we curated that space to make sure, you know, someone's the hot dog vendor, someone's the hamburger vendor, someone's the sushi, right? And there's not a lot of, you know, overlap in menus and great lengths, pages and pages of leases, and how what percentage of items can you have on your menu. So I'm really excited to see that space at its full potential, and I think the cocktail bar is a great addition to that.
Absolutely. All right. I'm going to say that does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurants of the week. Stick around. Monica, for our restaurants of the week, I want to talk to you about one new restaurant and one more established restaurant. Let's start with the new one. Talking about Postscript. This is the new restaurant at the Shops at Arrive. It comes from the owners of Dallas's XOXO Dining Room, which is just like very buzzy, kind of social media friendly concept. And they've partnered with a whole bunch of Houstonians to kind of make this place go, starting with Brian Caswell, who, of course, is a veteran Houston chef that we all know from his time at Reef, El Real Tex-Mex Cafe, maybe even Stola Sola. And Brian's got a great staff that he's kind of recruited to join him in this. Stephen Ripley, who was at Monkey's Tail for a long time and was part of the Helen Greek Food and Wine team before that, opened the Jonathan's The Rub out in Memorial. And Jeb Stewart, who was the sommelier and general manager at Cultivari for a long time. So it's an impressive group. And JD Woodward, who was a partner in Southern Goods and then was the executive chef of 1751 CN Bar and is just a super talented guy, is leading the
Yeah, he
kitchen.
is.
So anyway, I say all that to say to you, what did you think about Postscript when we went there for dinner last week?
Well, it's very pink, right? And they've said that, right? This is the female forward concept. And so I think that they've kind of nailed that girls' night brunch female establishment, right? From the decor. I mean, first thought is, you know, you kind of see it pulling up whether you're on Kirby or Westheimer, you know, underneath Milk and Honey. I've had people say, you know, what's that pink thing that's going at West Ave? From the outside, you know, it is visually stunning, right? I mean, you can see that it is something new there, right? So as far as that tactic, that worked. You know, I liked the decor. I liked the idea that they have their patron in mind. And I think you and I were sitting in there, was it a Tuesday night? And by the time we left, you know, probably half full, the large dining room, and maybe you and three other guys were the only dudes in there.
Yeah.
So you know, I think that they've kind of nailed that the audience preferences, right? So I don't know,
Right.
what did you
Pink
think about?
walls, butterflies
Yeah.
on the walls, inside and out, you know, portraits of prominent women. I know Princess Di was one of them in the bar area. It's all designed to sort of appeal to women. And of course, Tim Malcolm had a little bit of fun with them on cron.com because the chef is a man and the
Tom
GM
is
is
a
a
man,
man
the
and the
operators are
Owners are
men.
men, and it's like so how is this pitched to women? But it's like, well, it's working. You go there and it's working because it's full of
Yeah.
women and their friends having dinner and drinks. So
Yeah, no, it was hard for me to be there, honestly, and not think about that article. I read that article when it came out. What was it, 2, 3 weeks ago? And I get it, right? I mean, they come out by saying female focused. And whether that's, I don't know about necessarily on the food, the menu, right? It's the decor. You know, Aaron Hicks designed it and designed it with that in mind. It could have been cool if they really would have leaned into that concept and tried to find, you know, an executive chef that's a female, or maybe the Somm. There's so many great ones in Houston, but they didn't. And the food was great. I thought we had a great meal. Brian was actually out of town. We were there. We were looking forward to catching up with him, but it was spring break week. But you know, I was really impressed with the food. I, you know, JD came out and talked to us a little bit about some of the items, and you know, you actually had been before, and so typically when you've gone somewhere and I've come back with you, kind of ask you to get something new so we can try new things. And You had been hearing lots about the chicken and hummus dish, and I think that was probably my home run of the night. It was really, really tasty.
Yeah, and it's nothing fancy, right? Like
No.
it's just like a creamy, smooth hummus, nicely fried kind of chicken tenders. I think there's like a little bit of sweetness. I think the JD said there's like a pomegranate thing going on that kind of rounds it all out, but it's like it's crunchy and it's creamy and it's savory and it's a little bit sweet. It all comes together really well. And then Brian's doing the smoked pork chop that was an absolute, one of the most popular dishes at Reef for the
Yeah.
entire length of that restaurant. And I think it's just kind of nice to have it like back in Houston, right? Like available to
Yeah.
people.
Same.
And pork chops are having a little bit of a moment. There's one on the Basso menu that people are talking about that's also just outstanding. But so, it's an impressive looking piece of meat, right? Like it's thick and we split it and we still have leftovers and it's again, it's like a little bit sweet, it's smoky, it's juicy, it's I always sort of chuckle about, being the Jewish guy that's recommending you eat the pork, but here I am.
It's visually appealing. It's beautiful to photograph, right? It comes out, and I'm sure everyone's eyes, whoa, that's a big piece of meat. And I think Brian's been in Houston for, gosh, in Houston restaurants for over 20 years, right? And I just wonder if he would be fun to have on the podcast again, by the way.
Yes.
I wonder if he kind of has to follow that like Reef shadow around anywhere he goes. Like, even me just telling people I was going to Postscript, and kind of they were like, oh, what's that? I'm like, it's a new place. And Brian Castle was, oh yeah, God, I loved Reef. It's like the first thing everyone says, right? And I just wonder how much does that annoy him, or does he kind of lean in and say, okay, I'm going to bring the pork chop back so everybody stops talking about Reef. But it was a fantastic restaurant, and I like that this was kind of a nod to, okay, guys, like I've heard it. I've heard you talking about Reef. I'm going to bring this on the menu. But Brian's kind of had this career to where he had super success early on, and he had some stumbles and just different things he's done since then. But always been a fan of Brian, always been a fan of his food. Excited that he's kind of landed somewhere where he can get funky and creative with JD too. But yeah, I think everything we had was good. Like I said, the chicken and hummus, the salmon was very good. Hard to top the salmon that we had the week before, which we'll talk about next. But I think I was thinking about that salmon too, so that's probably why we ordered that. But yeah, no, I would go with girlfriends. I would go with on a brunch date. Beautiful patio. I think springtime is the perfect time for them to open this. I see them having a lot of success, especially right there in that West Ave location, right smack in the dab in the middle of River Oaks. It's a C and B scene kind of place with good food.
Right. We should say, this is formerly West Ave. Now the shops had arrived. Tootsie's is there. Pondicherry is there. Eddie V's is there. This was a long time ago, Del Frisco's Grill that had a nice little run in that space for a while, and it's been empty ever since. And so it is good to have that activated again and to see it vibrant. You mentioned Girls' Night, because like you said, I had been once previously, and I went with a couple of female friends of mine who kind of looked around and were like, I don't think I'd want to come here on a date, but I would come here with a group of friends. And so I just thought I would put that to you. Where do you come in on that? Is it Girls' Night or date night or both?
I think it depends on how secure that man is on that date, right? I don't know that I would take a suggest a first date. Let's go to this all pink restaurant, right? But I can see a friends gathering. There was a group, a party there when we were there. It was, I don't know, three or four couples, men and women. They know the food is good, but I think it just if it does feel female energy. I think it feels fun. I'd love to go back for brunch and see the music kind of pumped up. Light coming in those big windows. I do think it's a girls' night, slam dunk.
Absolutely. All right. And then let's move on to our second restaurant, as you alluded to. We also went to Le Jardinet. This is the French fine dining restaurant in the Museum of Fine Arts Houston's Kinder Building. I think I am contractually required to spell all that out. We were invited by
LeJardin's PR firm to check things out, to kind of revisit. I know I've talked about it on the show a couple times over the years, but it's been a minute. They had a seasonal menu that they wanted us to try, so we did the tasting menu, 5 courses. Monica, I know it was your first time going to Le Jardinet, so let me just ask you, what did you think? Did it live up to your expectations?
It was fantastic. I'll tell you what, I don't use this term often. I said this last year about Andiron. It's one of my favorite meals I've had probably in a year. It was fantastic. Being inside the MFA, feeling that kind of museum district energy that you don't expect to fine dining restaurant to be in the middle of an art gallery. Well, I don't, at least. Beautiful space, beautiful new building, beautiful kind of courtyard patio. It was a little bit warm when we were there, so we weren't sitting outside, but I could see that being a prime location among those trees. It was fantastic. And I'll tell you what, I understand why, Michelin stars are awarded to their sister restaurants. The service was fantastic. And, that's really the experience. You're going to have wonderful food. And if the service isn't on point, you're not getting that star, right? So I was really impressed with that, with the service, but the food itself, and they were, I think they were kind of just finishing up that piece of the menu, and they're actually having a seasonal menu that's coming out soon, which I'm very excited to go try that out. We talk a lot on the show about when we're sharing. I tend to share things right away when we're dining. I think you tend to maybe share things later, or maybe not. But
Yeah, no,
when
I
we're
tend to share them the next morning. I find I get slightly more like this is such inside baseball. I can't believe I'm even started the thought, but I
engagement.
find that I get slightly better engagement when I post in the morning, and then they kind of linger over the course of the day than when I post that night, and then they fall off the story. So that's why I do it that way.
Well, and great. That's your job to do that. So glad you figured that out. I typically post while we're there, and we always talk about my, what are the comments back that the DMs that I get, oh my God, what is this place? This looks amazing. And lots of comments, of course, I got that night and the next day. And a lot of people saying, I've been meaning to go here. I've been meaning to go here. This is a special occasion spot, right? You're not going to Le Jardinet 3 times a week or 3 times a month. This is an anniversary dinner. This is a celebration dinner. This is, you're trying to impress, your first date dinner. I would love to go back for lunch and just look at the crowd. I think it's just such an interesting location for that type of dining, kind of see what people are eating, seeing what the crowd looks like. But no, yeah, I had a fantastic time, and we had a great conversation. Like I said, we chatted with the service was great. The food was just phenomenal. Like I said, best meal I've had and since I can remember, honestly, it was just everything. We did the tasting menu, which was
And they
just
supplemented it with a couple extra courses because
sure.
because we asked them to
We're hungry.
essentially, but
We're lucky.
but I mean just looking back at my pictures kind of and looking at the menu, that winter squash spetzel with the black truffle was so great.
Oh, yeah.
The Parisian gnocchi with the mushrooms and more truffle, and then you sort of alluded to the contrast between the salmon at Postscript and at Le Jardinet. And it's not that it was very tasty at Postscript, and I was glad that we ordered it. And the only problem was that we had been to Le Jardinet the week before. And
Right.
that may be like one of the very best pieces of salmon I've ever had in my life. And I, you were sort of marveling at Chef Felipe came over afterwards and we were talking to him, and it's like, how did you cook it? And he was like, well, we brine it and then we sear it, and it's like, it's not sous vide, it's just like really, really good technique, like really
Yeah.
classic French seafood cooking, and they just nailed it. And to get that crispy skin, and then it's still really juicy and succulent and satisfying, just everything about that dish was great. And dessert, all their desserts are so good too. So it's just, this is a very comprehensive dining experience. We've talked about March quite a bit, and a lot of the things that I like about going to March, I also like about going to Le Jardinet. It's the service is very elegant. The wine staff is very knowledgeable. They can do different pairings depending on your taste and kind of what they're excited about. And you get that kind of museum quality you know, no surprise, museum quality art on the walls of a restaurant that's located in a museum. And it does add sort of drama and a sense of occasion to the whole affair. And so, you know, I'm with you. This is not like, you're not just popping in for a weeknight dinner, or if you can, congrats on your financial success. But
take me if right. you are.
But yeah. for people that are looking for a premium experience, I would rank this as like one of the very best fine dining restaurants in Houston.
I totally agree. Make the reservation. Like I said, so many people message me, God, I've been meaning to go here. Do it. Even if it's not a special occasion, you know, save those pennies up and have the experience, because it was really special.
All right. I'm going to say that does it for the restaurants of the week. Monica, thank you very much.
Thanks, Eric.
That does it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening. Join me on Thursday when my guests will be Jacques Ferrand and Max Lapp from Fossa.